welcome to another edition of the Hank Unplugged podcast. We are committed to bringing the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people to your earbuds, and today's podcast has special significance to me. And I want to unpack that a little bit as we get started. I was chrismated Palm Sunday, April 9, 2017. 6 days later, I was diagnosed with stage 4 mantle cell lymphoma, one of the worst of the lymphomas. I was chrismated in a church that bears the moniker St. Nectarius, St. Nectarius Greek Orthodox Church. And I was chrismated in a church whose name is associated with the patron saint of cancer. And just a few days after I'm chrismated, I'm diagnosed with cancer and a very serious form of cancer. Well, not long after my diagnosis, I was invited to go to Egina by Dr. Paul Sahakis, who is a world-class doctor as well as a father in our church. And he wanted me to go there to complete my healing. And so I did. I stayed at his house on the top of the mountain, and every day, Kathy is my wife, we would traverse the mountain to the monastery of St. Nectarius. We did that 6 days in a row. In the evenings, particularly when we had jet lag, I would memorize passages from St. Nectarius, as well as from His All Holiness, our beloved Patriarch Bartholomew. And so this was a very important time in my own journey. Eventually in 2019, I had a transplant, and today I am cancer-free. So there was a combination of both medical superiority in terms of the treatment that I got, as well as a spiritual dimension to my healing. Again, I am now cancer-free after 5 years. Obviously, the cancer could return. And I'm always reminded that God is not interested in healing us physically. He is interested in healing the whole of us. And certainly, my bout with cancer got my attention in many different ways, most poignantly on a spiritual level. So I say all of that as prologue to this particular podcast, because I have a personal stake in St. Nectarius. And every single Sunday at St. Nectarius, we sing to him, as it were. We joyfully commemorate the welcome arrival of your sacred relics, Holy Hierarch Nectarius. We call upon the grace of God in you, which sanctifies our bodies and our souls. You alleviate our suffering, and you cure the illnesses afflicting us. Glory to Christ who glorified you. Glory to him for your miracles. Glory to him for all the cures that he works through you. Well, now, not only are we as a church familiar with St. Nectarius, but the world is going to become familiar with St. Nectarius. Obviously, he's a modern-day saint, but he is now memorialized not only in writings, but also in film. Jelena Popovich has produced a movie. She is a Serbian-American actress. She's a writer, a director, a producer, and she wrote and directed an epic movie that is titled Man of God. Also joining me on the podcast today is Metropolitan Cleopas. He originally is from Greece and was elected Metropolitan of Sweden and all Scandinavia. He was ordained into the episcopacy in 2014 by His All Holiness Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew, who, by the way, I had the opportunity to spend some time with about a month ago in Istanbul. And His Eminence has also served as a member of the Holy Synod of the Ecumenical Patriarchate. He studied theology in many different places. This is a mind blower in and of itself. You talk about somebody that's interesting, informative, and inspirational. He studied theology at the universities of Athens, Thessaloniki, Durham, the Holy Cross Greek Orthodox School of Theology in Brooklyn, Massachusetts, Harvard Divinity School, and Boston University. That is quite a resume in and of itself. Metropolitan Cleopas was honored by the Academy of Athens in 2009 for his book on the life of St. Nectarius. He has published some 9 books and many papers in various prestigious theological and historical journals. He is fluent in Greek, English, and Hebrew, as well as having knowledge of Latin, French, and Italian. Also joining me on this podcast, delighted to have him, is Christopher Tripolis. He serves as an official translator for the Greek Consulate General in New York, an interpreter for the permanent mission of Greece to the United Nations. He serves as an executive aide to His Eminence Metropolitan Cleopas, consulting on speech writing, translation, and communications for the Holy Metropolis of Sweden and all Scandinavia. He is a published author and has actually delivered speeches on the life of St. Nectarius. There's much more that I could say about my guest, but I think enough to pique your interest and know we're talking about extraordinary people. I want to start with you, Yelena. How did you have this vision for taking the life of a modern-day saint and memorializing that on film?
First, thank you for having me. It's an honor. And to answer that question, I honestly didn't, even though I had my own journey in the Orthodox Church and I was living in Los Angeles and for many, many years going through my own spiritual battle, I was familiar with different saints. I was at that point going regularly to the church, partaking of the mysteries. But I never thought of making a film about a saint. I simply thought that I would, whatever I was writing and doing, I wanted to, in my own way, in the way that I was given to share the light and good message. However, in 2012, I went to Belgrade after my father had passed away. I was going there for a 1-year memorial of him passing away. I wasn't able to go for to attend his funeral because, you know, I didn't get my green card and citizenship sorted out when he passed away in 2011. So even though I didn't see him for 10 years, unfortunately, it was hard. I was able to go the year after. The reason I'm mentioning my father, there is a big importance here because my father is somebody that, like St. Nectarius, he wasn't a metropolitan, he wasn't a priest, but he was a righteous man. He was a civil engineer who was prosecuted, who basically was taken out from his position because he did not want to participate in unethical dealings in the company. And they had to bring 6 false witnesses to get rid of him. And that's what they did. And I've lived my whole life. I remember my mother and other people saying that maybe he made a mistake. Maybe he should have been part of the system, part of the establishment that doesn't really follow the God's law. And but he always impressed me, and I was always proud of him that he had chosen a difficult path. And he did end up working in the small factory, and he said he never regretted it because he was able to sleep at night. So after he, having him in my mind and in my heart, going to Serbia in 2012, obviously I was thinking about him and the fact that I wasn't able to see him for 10 years. I went to the monastery, next door, and I attended the liturgy. And after the liturgy, I went into a bookstore and I saw a book about St. Nectarius. Now, I didn't know much about him. I was told that he was an amazing saint, that I should read about him. So I decided to buy a book and read about him on my way back to Los Angeles. So probably because my own personal struggles, because faith has played an incredible part in my life, I thanks to God and his church, I can say I'm alive, even physically, not only spiritually. And probably because my father had suffered similar, he had the similar trials in his life. I felt when I read a book about St. Nectarius, I felt like as if it was written in my soul, his story. And it was very, very personal to me. And because of that understanding, very personal understanding, I felt that if given a chance, if it was God's will, that I would be able to bring St. Nectarius' story to people's hearts. And this was something that I had in mind to do, and it was something that was very strong. And in 2013, I went to Aegina for the first time. I went to Greece with the outline of the film. And then in 2014 and 15, I was there with a script asking St. Nectarius to bless me, and if it's God's will, to help me to for this film to happen. And then when I was in Greece in 2016 and 17, I was very lucky to have met His Eminence Metropolitan Cleopas, who was a consultant on the film, who had told me, don't finish your script until you read the English version of my book that just came out. And I'm very grateful that he had advised me to do so, because that had a huge impact on what I have, on my final work, final script of the movie. And with God's help, you know, I must say, with God's help and with the help of St. Nectarius, this had happened. So this is how it came about.
Yeah, Yelena, when is the movie going to be in theaters?
The movie is going to be in theaters in the U.S. For 2 days. It's done through Fathom Events. It's going to be shown on March 21st and March 28th in 800 theaters across the country, 46 states, 175 cities. It's accessible to anyone. If they go to fathomevents.com, or if they just type in Man of God, they can find, and they put their zip code, they can find a place to go and see the movie.
Yeah, a couple of other questions before I move on to our other guests. It's often said that it is much easier to portray evil than goodness. So talk about the challenge of portraying the goodness of St. Nectarius.
You know, I studied at a place called Playhouse West, which is really a great training for actors and directors and writers. And it's a method training. And I've learned where I studied, we've learned something very important, that the only way that we can tell a story is something that we understand. That if I was going to do a story, write a story or direct a story, I have to do something that I have a personal understanding for. So what I did, especially because this film has a spiritual theme, I've really focused on a human, I focused on making it as human as possible, and bringing his human side on the screen and focusing on the truth. Because only I was aware that only if I can tell the truth that I understand and his truth, that only that way I could potentially get a blessing to have a spiritual quality in the film. And so especially with a subject like this, so the truth was something very crucial in choosing actors, in directing, in writing. It was essential for this kind of film.
Well, it is an amazing film, and I do want you to say something about His Eminence Metropolitan Cleopas. He obviously had a great impact on you and on the film. So your perspective on His Eminence.
Well, first of all, I'm really honored that I have met him. I think apart from everything that you have mentioned about him, knowing him personally, I think he's an amazing human being, a great man, and so to say, man of God. And I felt really blessed to have met him, and he made me feel always welcome, and I feel love in his presence, and he has always he opened his arms. He wanted to help from the get-go, and it was a huge help, and I must say that I feel like St. Ikarios brought us together, and his help was very, very important in making this film happen.
Your Eminence, I am really interested in your profound interest in St. Nectarius. You are perhaps the preeminent expert on his life. Tell us, from your perspective, how significant this modern-day saint is.
St. Nectarius, I think I want to start by mentioning something that impressed me tremendously. Every time I visit his monastery in Aegina, there is a small, a nice painting that Saint Nectarius painted. He painted small crosses in his monastery and put the inscription below the cross, comma, the part of my life, Stavros Imeris to view. Recently, as you probably know, I wrote a review of Miss Elena Popovich's film, Men of God, where I pointed out that in many ways, this film reminded me of the silent era films. Because of the director's conscious and artistic decision to convey St. Nectarius' forbearance and perseverance against his slanders through his silence. A silence which is, in fact, really a continuous dialogue with God, to whom St. Nectarius would turn as his refuge in the face of these malicious attacks and receive strength to overcome this cross he bore throughout his archipastoral ministry. The saint's outcry in the face of the injustices he was confronted with goes silent, and his silence cries out. His silence was not a passive and disengaged position and attitude, but rather a virtue, which was altogether different from what we're used to seeing in our Bosnian society. According to St. Isaac the Syrian, silence is the language of the age to come. Hmm. And for St. John of the Ladder of Climacus, silence is the mother of prayer, hidden spiritual elevation. Silence speaks louder than words and aims at seeing truth prevail. It is a lesson that remains timeless. The saint followed the path of silence, which has the power to bring God down to earth and speak to the souls of the people, to shape consciences, to work miracles, to lead us to repentance, contrition of the heart, and, of course, prayer.
That is so beautifully stated. I'm thinking about that phrase, timeless lessons, and that's one of the things that I observed or experienced, I should say, as I watched the movie Man of God. The timeless lessons, there are so many phrases, so many monikers within the movie that have resonated with me, that have stuck with me. You mentioned, Your Eminence, just a few moments ago, the matter of slander, and I might add persecution. And so often when we get slandered, and all of us who are public figures are certainly subject to that, we want to get an agency that can clean up our name and clean up the internet and try to sort of sanitize, get rid of the slander. But yet our Lord said, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, falsely say all kinds of evil against you on account of me. Rejoice and be glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. So in this film, Your Eminence, you see a man who is slandered and persecuted, but doesn't defend himself. He does defend his spiritual children, but he doesn't defend himself. Make, if you would, a personal application to all of us that are going to watch that movie.
So, since you repeatedly mentioned the term slander, let me say the following. As human beings, it is natural to feel pain, sorrow, or even a sense of injustice when we are falsely accused or slandered. I think the important thing here is to always try and discern the will of God and opportunities for spiritual edification and upliftment that such attacks reveal. St. John Chrysostom says that when you ask God to render justice, you're on the receiving end of God's goodwill. But when you yourself emulate God and show mercy or forgiveness to someone else, you find yourself on the giving end, with God on you a favor, so to speak. And because our Lord is gracious, if he is to repay kindness, you can be certain his repayment will be far greater than the original value of the favor. I readily admit that in my own life, I've noticed that precisely at the time when I am engaged in some productive form of ministry or writing, the attacks that come my way are stronger than ever, perhaps manifesting a demonic attempt to distract me from God's work. Certainly, if I were to allow myself to become sidetracked and preoccupied with defending myself, instead of staying on course and completing the original task, I will fall into the trap set by the evil one. God has a way of allowing the truth to prevail and setting the record straight at the time he deems most opportune for the salvation of not only our own souls, but those of others. The fathers of the church teach us that the only time we should defend ourselves against slander is in matters of faith, because this entails the spiritual health and salvation of our flock.
That is so wise and beautifully stated. I wonder, Yelena, as you listen to that, and as His Eminence talked about spiritual warfare, what kind of spiritual warfare that you must certainly have experienced in making a film like Man of God?
I have experienced it before. I made a film, Man of God. I've unfortunately have experienced slander and attacks like most of us do. But during the making of Man of God, I was kind of used to experiencing a constant obstacles and difficulties. But maybe because I'm Serbian and I come from a family that one of my ancestors was a great warrior. His name is Marko Miljanov. As a matter of fact, my father has him on his tombstone as a reference to where he is coming from. He liberated Montenegro from the Turkish invasion. So I naturally like people like St. Anthony the Great, like the saints. I like fighters, and I feel like I'm a fighter myself. So I know what it means to get knocked down and to get up and not give up and never stay on the ground, but always get up and continue. But when I was doing the film about St. Nectarius, what really was extreme difficulty for me was not only there were a lot of things that we usually face, but my health had deteriorated a lot. And I found myself, because it was a big responsibility for me to make a film about such saint, I did it from my heart, and I feel that I had a lot of difficulties working in the heat. I literally spent every day with the ice on my chest. I even finished in an emergency room a couple of times with extreme arrhythmias. I mean, there were a lot of obstacles, and I must say that Hierondis, abbess of St. Nectarius Monastery, because she was the one who had given me a blessing and told me from the day one that St. Nectarius wants this film to be made, and to be aware that I will have attacks, that things will go wrong, but not to worry, everything will be resolved. And I remember that how many times I was on the phone with her, even crying, asking her, are you sure I'm going to be okay? And yes, I went through, I don't want to use the word hell, but I went through a very difficult time. But I didn't give up. I would go the next day, and I felt if I die today, it's okay. Maybe somebody else will continue the movie. But I'm not. I'm still around, and glory to God for that.
Well, not only around, but what you have done is going to make a lasting impact, not only on, you know, our country, but I would say in the broader perspective on the world, certainly on Western civilization. Christopher, I want to bring you in on this discussion as well. You have served as an executive aide to His Eminence, and you're a published author, but you've given speeches on the life of St. Nectarius. I want to get your unique perspective, not only on the movie, but on St. Nectarius, the saint and the man.
Well, let me begin by thanking you for the gracious invitation. There is seemingly so much to say about St. Nectarius, and one of the things that stands out in my mind is just how manifold his ministry truly was. One of the things that I often find myself discussing with His Eminence when we reflect on the work or when we're looking at different pieces of the material that was used in the publication was just how dynamic of a figure Saint Nectarius was. It wasn't that he was just limited to one area. Certainly, we know him as a prolific author, as a scholar. I mean, some of his writings, if you look at them, he uses a form of Greek that dates back to pre-Attic Greek. He uses Homeric Greek in his poetry. So that's something very rare. And so we see someone who is extremely talented, but at the same time, if you look at his letters to his nuns during the period when he's reestablishing the convent, the Holy Trinity Convent in Aegina, or if you look at aspects of his administration at the seminary in Athens, at Rosario Seminary, you see him giving such specific and technical directions on matters of construction, as if he were a technician or a foreman or an overseer. In fact, there are many instances where we see the saint rolling up his sleeves and engaging in manual labor, and not at a young age, at an advanced age. So it's one of the really amazing things that I took away is that the sanctity of this hierarch, right, is evident and manifest on so many multiple levels. And it really speaks to, I think, many of the challenges faced by the prelates of our church, having to handle so many different issues at the same time, and applying the spirituality, the orthodox mindset and worldview in the advancement of all the different projects and aspects and responsibilities that they're entrusted and charged with.
Your Eminence, I want to go back to you for a moment. I want you to weigh in on the veracity of miracles. I mean, we live in an age in which so many people are addicted to philosophical naturalism. They think the physical facts fix all the facts and don't recognize that there's a spiritual world to be embraced. And that spiritual world is as real as the flesh upon our bones. If you put it in the language of C.S. Lewis, he talks about walking from the wardrobe into Narnia. But unfortunately, so many of us are wretched flatlanders. We don't know that there's a mysterious world around us. And one of the beauties of Orthodoxy is that we talk about the sacraments as mysteries, things that we can't fully explicate, things that are beyond comprehension, but are as yet real. Can you talk about the miracles that were present in the life and the ministry of Saint Nectarius, and how there is a difference between, you know, the fake and the real? I mean, we have so many people in Western civilization, particularly pastors who are in the health and prosperity gospel, and you see so much counterfeit that oftentimes we negate the real miracles that God works through saints like Saint Nectarius.
Miracles are experienced. Since the earthly ministry of Christ and the establishment of the church, this can be summed up in a slogan, come and see, ecco che ide. It is with these words that Philip invites Nathanael to come and see Christ and get to know him for himself. It is in the spirit that the Greeks traveled to Jerusalem shortly after Christ's Holy Passion and tell Philip that they want to see Christ. It is with these words, again, that the angel informs the myrrh bearers that Christ has risen, invites them to come and see the empty tomb. Again, it is with these words that Christ himself appears to the apostles and invites Thomas to come and see the mark of the nails and place his finger at his side so that he might believe. The church always has and always will beckon the people to come and see. Either it's for Christ himself or for Saint Nectarius, because as Christians, I believe that we derive our knowledge empirically. And this miracle is culminated at every divine liturgy. Saint Nectarius was a hierarch of the church. It's the moment when we eat and drink with Christ at his holy table, partaking of his body and blood. Even in the information age in which we live today, the church needs no press kit or media strategy regarding matters of faith and miracles. This can only be experienced firsthand by living them out in our life. And this is precisely what the church invites the faithful to do. By the grace of God, there's no shortage of miracles in the church, even or perhaps especially in the present day. Sometimes during my sermons, I say that miracle is not something supernatural, but it is the presence of God in our daily life. We should not be astonished or surprised when we hear that a miracle was performed as something really nice happening, because this is the presence of God, the divine intervention in our lives, as it was in the saint's life. So Saint Nectarius constantly reminds us of the presence of God in our daily lives.
Maybe you can add to that, Your Eminence, by talking about the significance of relics, because part of the movie really underscores that reality, that there are relics of saints, and those relics are not pulverized and thrown away, but they're memorialized. So every Sunday at St. Nectarius, I go to the relics of St. Nectarius. I make the sign of the cross. I did that during my whole cancer journey. Speak to why we place such reverence in the relics of the saints.
I'm sure you know well that for many years after the passing of St. Nectarius, his body was intact. And a beautiful myrrh came out of his body. And that was being witnessed by many people who visited his tomb and paid their respects and prayed in front of his tomb. Many years later, of course, the body was dissolved and the relics were sent as a blessing to the four corners of the world, as a blessing for people to venerate them and for miracles to be performed. So Saint Nectarius is a miraculous saint, and it's something that it's well known by thousands of people have experienced his blessing, his miraculous intervention. And even I have in my office, I have a small relic box with a tiny piece of the relic of St. Nectarius. And I can share with you a beautiful story that I experienced last year. On the name day of St. Nectarius, the feast day of St. Nectarius, November 9th, I brought the relic box at the Cathedral of St. George here in Stockholm in order for the people to venerate the relics at the end of the services. A day later, two ladies called me and said how beautiful the service was, especially with the presence of the second hierarch who celebrated the Divine Liturgy and chanted so beautifully. And we admired his beautiful vestments. I said to them, I did not celebrate the Divine Liturgy. I was just presiding over. I was at the throne. And the only moment I entered the altar was when I brought, in the beginning of the services, I brought the relic box in and I placed it on the holy table. I said, no, there was another hierarch was vested. And the moment you enter the altar, he stepped aside. And he stopped chanting because you were chanting. I said, probably you're referring to Father Bartholomew, the presiding priest at the cathedral. I said, no. He was vested with the bishop's vestments. I said, then it could be somebody else but St. Nectarius. So that was a blessing that took place when we brought his miraculous relics in the altar. And also, I don't want to take from your time, but if I may share very quickly another story. One of our clergymen's mother was dying at the hospital. So the priest called me and said, please come and say pray because my mother's dying. I said to him, Father, definitely I will come and visit your mother and will pray together for her to recover. But I will come with, I will not come by myself. So the moment I enter the room, the father asked me, who is with you? I said, just bring a table here and let me place on the table, the relics of St. Nectarius with me. And the moment we prayed, I said to him, I'm confident that your mother will fully recover and will leave the hospital in a very few days. Say, Father, I'm very confident about this. I said, I don't think so. I said, Uranus, because the doctors told us that that will be her last night on Earth, if I may use this expression. So she venerated the relics, and the next day she went back home, safe and sound. So this is the miraculous dynamism, energy, power of the relics of Saint Nectarius, and of course of every saint.
Yeah, that's beautifully said. Yelena, I want you to chime in on this, because one of the things that I found to be profound in the movie is the reality that Saint Nectarius, given the gift of healing on the one hand, but also in the movie, you see that he makes certain that people get the proper medical treatment as well. Both are highlighted in the movie. I remember the story in the movie of a young man who was sick, and there was a discussion about, I think it was Saint Nectarius who was saying, you know, he needs proper medical attention. But he also then, along with others, prayed for this young man, and the young man was healed. So God uses means. I could say in my own circumstance, I had a wonderful oncologist, but I also believe that God supernaturally touched my life so that I could continue doing what I was doing in terms of ministry in the fourth quarter of my life.
Well, that's when we talk about Saint Nectarius, he was very much like that. When I, if we read the letters to the nuns that he has written, you could see how much he cares about their physical health. As a matter of fact, he doesn't want them to get sick. He, because he feels that we are, everything is connected, our spiritual health, our mental health, and our physical health. And he talks about this quite often. And in advice that he gave to the nuns many times, he was very concerned about some of the nuns' health, and he would try to get a medicine, because he said to them that don't be too proud and think that, you know, you can just get sick and you will get spiritually stronger, because sometimes physical sickness can be too overwhelming, especially if you bring it upon yourself. That's pride. So we need to be physically healthy as well, so we can fight spiritual battles. So that was something that he would refer to quite often in his teachings, in the letters to the nuns. So yes, he was he always relied on God's help, 100%. He was somebody who believed that everything was possible with God, but he was very level-headed, and he didn't invite things upon himself or ignore the help that's available to him when needed. So that was and that shows in the scene with Nicholas, who was ultimately healed by the prayers of Saint Nectarius.
Yeah, Christopher, I want you to weigh in this as well. You have served as an executive aide to His Eminence. You've been in the inside, so to speak, of the structure of apostolic succession that you see within Orthodoxy. You know it from the inside out. And certainly, I think that you can testify that patriarchs, as well as metropolitans and bishops in general, priests, we're all human. And I want you to process that for us, because that's one of the things you see in the film. You see the corruption of power. In fact, Saint Nectarius actually speaks about that explicitly. He talks about positions of power being like a cancer that eat at you and turn you into something you despise. And in some sense, in the film, you see that Saint Nectarius is thankful that he was not chosen to be a patriarch, because of how easily power can corrupt.
Absolutely. If we see anything from the unjust persecution suffered by Saint Nectarios. We see that the brunt of it came from within. It came from within the ranks of the church, and most of the time, the cause of it was the entourage surrounding persons of power. So, for instance, in Egypt, as the patriarch at the time, Sophronius was growing advanced in age and was increasingly being surrounded by his entourage. Certainly, there was jealousy. They saw that Saint Nectarios was up and coming; that he was a very dynamic, that he had the love of the people, and their human flaws got the better of them in this instance. And we can see this pattern being repeated when he returns to Greece up until his old age in Aegina. So certainly, I think that in the life of Saint Nectarios, we see one thing about the church, that it is theanthrope. It has the divine part to it, but it also has the human part. And the human part is, of course, as we are mortals, with its flaws. And that's precisely where Christ comes to fill or to complete what is lacking. I think you mentioned apostolic succession. If I think back in to the times that I've witnessed ordinations taking place, and I think back to the prayers that are recited during the ordination process, the invocation of divine grace, which strengthens that which is infirm and heals that which is completes that which is lacking, is very clearly stated in the church. As we head, as we make our way to Pascha and we prepare for Holy Week, I think of the hymns of Good Friday, beautiful, the canon that is chanted on Good Friday. And one of them, many of them, talk about the fact that Christ's our salvation is something that Christ won for us because he comes down with his divine presence and takes on that which is weaker, the human. So we have the divine being connected to the human, and of course the stronger pulls the weaker to it and completes and fulfills it. So organizationally, I suppose, if you want to look at it from a layperson's perspective, our challenge is to take the natural human shortcomings and flaws that exist in the church and in its leadership, right, and to allow the healing power of Christ and the grace of Christ to complete that which is lacking. And despite our flaws and despite our challenge, our shortcomings, lead us on the road to completion or perfection. In Greek, the term is synonymous.
Yeah, beautifully said. Your Eminence, I want to ask you a little bit about the time frame in which Saint Nectarios lived. This is in the aftermath of 400 years of Ottoman suppression and slavery. It is a time that is very significant in the shaping of the church in that epoch of time. Can you elaborate on that?
I think it's important to point out here that Saint Nectarios lived in an era that most of the clergymen of his time were not well educated. I think he was an exception to the rule because he was an exceptional divine man, holy man, the man of God. I'm using the title of the movie. He was so well educated He wrote over 40 books, in numerous articles. His Greek was unique. And he helped tremendously with the ministry of the Church of Greece. He was asked by the then Archbishop of Athens, Metropolitan of Athens, to help with these great issues that they had with the different heresies of the time. So Saint Nectarius used to visit many churches of Athens and Piraeus and was preaching where hundreds of people gathered, you know, listening to him. Elena before mentioned his letters. There's so much to learn from this collection of correspondence that he sent to so many people, from university professors to the students, the seminarians at Rosarius Seminary of Athens, to people who needed his spiritual and pastoral support, the nuns that he guided with the letters that he sent, 135, if I'm not mistaken, 36 letters that he sent during his ministry and tenure at the Rosarius Seminary of Athens. So he was an exceptional hierarch, so well educated, and his knowledge, his charisma, he was multi-talented. He was a poet. He wrote in Homeric dialect. He wrote beautiful poems. Who could do back then, who most of the clergy of the time was unfortunately not educated or not educated at all? So, because that was his inclination, his vocation, his calling. He loved education. He loved reading books since he was a child. And he wanted to share this knowledge, this beauty of knowledge with his compatriots, his colleagues, the other clergymen, and especially his own flock.
One of the things, Yelena, that I really loved about your film is the emphasis that you placed on the poor and the downtrodden. Christopher was mentioning that we are in the Pascha season of the church right now, and so we're fasting and we're devoting ourselves to prayer. But we're also commissioned to complete that triple braided cord, as it were, with almsgiving. And in the movie, you highlight the fact that Saint Nectarius cared for the very least of these. There's a very poignant part of the film where he sits next to someone that is truly downtrodden, and he gives that man his shoes. There are people walking by in robes who are not even seeing the needs of others, but he sees those needs. And Yelena, that is a lesson for all of us, isn't it?
That's correct. That's why this title is titled Man of God. He was a real man of God. He was somebody who lived by what he preached. And he was the one who truly cared for people, and he was willing to sacrifice for people. As a matter of fact, not only that he cared for those people, they were in pain and they were suffering, he identified with them. As a matter of fact, if you pay attention to the film, he feels more comfortable around those than with people that don't know what suffering is, because he has experienced suffering himself. And he therefore has a true and honest compassion for those that suffer. And it's sort of reminds me a little bit even of the moment in the scriptures when, forgive me if I cannot quote it exactly, but I will paraphrase it, when there is a talk about the poor are the one that are chosen by God to bring the good news, to bring his word. So therefore, we should not overlook the poor or judge the poor. There is a place in the scripture that it's really emphasized. It's those people that suffer first of all, this film is made for. I made this film for those, this is what I did. I know what suffering is myself, and I know what pain is, and I've experienced the grace of God in those moments, and I feel that, and I did this in order to help those, hopefully, that are about to give up on faith, they're maybe about to not go back to church. And to touch up on the subject that we already brought up, forgive me, I just want to say that. I experienced such help and grace and mercy from God, as sinful as I am, that it always pained me. People usually ask me, why do you go to church so much? Why do you pray? I never shared my story on purpose with anybody, but people noticed that was something very important to me. And in those moments, they would tell me, well, I don't go to church because of what's happening in the church. And that was something that I heard over and over and over again. And that was also one of the main reasons that I made this film, to show people that there are no angels in the church, there are people in the church. And what we can get from the church and from the mysteries and from Christ and having a relationship with him, it's something that we should not give up because we are looking at what's happening around us. That's why there is that scene in the movie that it's something that I personally experienced, and that line was told to me by a priest when I was in the church praying, and that line goes like this: if it had been done to you what had been done to me, I would not come back to church anymore. So now you can imagine, that line was told to me after 4 years of wrenching, guttering pain and suffering that I've experienced inside of the church. But I never gave up on Jesus Christ because he's done for me so much more than the pain that I've experienced. So I put that in a movie. And what does St. Nectarius say? Woe to me if my faith depends on men. So this movie is so personal to me, and it's a present to those who suffer, and it's film about faith and knowing that God is there for all of us, and he's the only thing that makes sense, and we should stick very close to him and to the church.
Yeah, beautifully said. Your Eminence,
may I add something?
I was just going to ask you to.
I personally, think that the purpose of the movie was not to reveal the saints' esoteric life, the inner life, but to approach its comprehension and explaining it in an upright manner. I think that was the direction to which Ms. Popovich's efforts were geared. The viewers will learn about the road that St. Nectarius chose to follow, his spiritual struggles, his greatness of heart, his philanthropic work, his teachings, his writings, and his life of a saint, of the man of God. And an understanding will be promoted about the fact that the saint's dynamism and time was spent towards achieving his esoteric cleansing and sanctification. This monastic of Aegina incorporated the ascetic tradition of the Orthodox faith in his lived experiences. His kindness towards his fellow men, as we can see in the movie, his being so humble. So due to his spirit of discernment, he did not turn his method of ascesis and his spiritual struggles into the be all and end all of his life. But rather he viewed ascesis as a means by which he could gain nipsis, or sobriety of life and approach deification through the communication with those who are considered as being marginalized. I believe that through his life, St. Nectarius managed to become the good shepherd, the wise teacher, the light of Christ, which shines for all. He embodied the authentic tradition of the church fathers and lived out their life and teachings. And by emulating them and continuing their footsteps, he himself became a church father as well, proving that the patristic era, I think this is very important to say, did not end with St. John of the Damascene, St. John of Damascus, but continues up until the present day, so long as the Holy Spirit will illuminate the body of Christ and give rise to saints, even until the final days. And I think the movie says that St. Nectarius' ministry speaks to the minds and hearts of those who seek signs, as well as those who seek wisdom, because both abound in him, being that he combines divine knowledge and scholarly erudition.
One of the things I want to pick up on here, if I could, and perhaps I can ask Christopher to expand on this a bit, a beauty of the movie is that you really become aware of the eternal perspective, the reality that this life is but a drop in the ocean of eternity. And you have a character, Yelena was really alluding to, Costas in the movie, who is very, very close to St. Nectarius as a publicist and a personal aide. And he couldn't get over the fact that St. Nectarius was not fighting to be a patriarch. He thought St. Nectarius could have so much fame and fortune because he was so gifted. And he couldn't abide the fact that St. Nectarius was turning his back on all of that to live a life in virtual obscurity, as it were. But what comes through in all of this is that he was living for eternal rewards, that this life is a vapor, here today, gone tomorrow. Christopher, that was such a poignant part of the film, that we must recognize the brevity of our life in this mortal body, that we will one day be immortal, imperishable, incorruptible, and what we do now counts for all eternity.
That's absolutely true. The scene that you describe with St. Nectarius's aide Costis is a very powerful one. As I think back to the correspondence, the saint himself makes mention of it in his letters to his to the nuns of his convent. Following the death of Patriarch Sophronius, there was rumor, and I'm sure that Costis in his heart was hoping that this would clear the way for the return of the saint, the triumphant return to the Patriarchate of Alexandria, from where he was expelled as patriarch. And from a human side, right? I mean, even from a journalistic standpoint, yeah, it would have made a great story. But as you said, we can't imagine when we look at it from a different perspective. When we look at it from an immortalized perspective, when we look at it from the perception of the church, where time stands still and is not perceived in the same increments that that we perceive it in our daily lives, perhaps this outcome would have been to the detriment of the plenitude of the church, because the convent in Aegina would not have been established. The work of the saint and his influence upon those nuns and the subsequent spread of his fame throughout Greece and elsewhere, since outside of the borders of Greece throughout the world, throughout the four corners of the world, may not have happened as we see it today. So oftentimes when we talk about, in English, we say that something might be a blessing in disguise, right? The inability, very quickly after the death of the patriarch, you see that the circles within the Patriarchate of Alexandria moved to bar St. Nectarios from even placing his candidacy. And it shouldn't be overlooked that there was governmental involvement at that time as well. If you look at the documents, there's all sorts of jockeying on behalf of ambassadors and consular authorities, because the position is not only a spiritual one, but it is an extension of a political position. There's a lot of leverage that comes with it. And so certainly in a deeper sense, right, in a spiritual sense, the saint was certain that he was not going to get elected. And he had spoken about this to Costis many times. But nonetheless, he did make a trip to Alexandria, not to place his candidacy, but rather to do his part to ensure a smooth transition and to make sure that the throne would not remain vacant, and that very quickly a new patriarch would be elected, and that the vessel, the ship would once again be in smooth or in safe waters. So yes, certainly I would agree that many times, and we see this in many phases of the saint's life, blessings in disguise. What initially seems to be a bad thing, or an unfortunate turn of events, ends up being revealed by God, perhaps through divine providence, as what was the best possible outcome for the salvation of many.
Yelena, I have to say that the movie captivated me the first time I saw it, the second time I saw it, the third time I saw it, particularly the end of the movie. There are a couple of things that I want you to elaborate on, if you would. One is the poignant scene where the slander of St. Nectarios has reached a fever pitch. There's a woman who is accusing him of raping her daughter. He is being accused of having sex with the nuns on Aegina, the island of Aegina at the convent, and then burying their children on the land. I mean, it is an emotive, powerful scene where you see someone being slandered and turning the other cheek, exactly like Jesus tells us to in Scripture.
Well, that was definitely a pinnacle of I think, his accusations. It was extremely intense and painful. And in that moment, as you can remember, there is that scene when he decides to say nothing. And even when the nuns start saying, "Why, Father, why you're not saying anything?" He just puts his hand on his mouth and points to the sky. When we reach such a point of, I think, of course, we cannot relate to what he has gone through, but there are points in our life that we reach really low points where he reached, I mean, other people reach low point with him, but that was extremely painful moment, is when you really have to give it to God. You cannot say anything anymore. It's so bad. It's so atrocious. There's nothing that you can do anymore. And it's not even a point of defending, because it's so untrue, it's so ridiculous, it's so painful, that at that moment he decides to stay completely silent. I don't know if you remember that moment, and just points to the sky and to leave it completely to God to resolve that situation, because it was really nothing, that it was, everything was a lie, a slander, and this wasn't the first time it happened to him. This was, now he's at the monastery, he is much older, he is sick, so he has, you know, done nothing to nobody. He's done everything to help others, And he can't even, and you would think that when he built a monastery in Eginat, he would find some peace. But no, they will not let him have peace. So this is when it just becomes outrageous. And at that moment, he simply shows by example that you really have to trust in God no matter what. And that's on that scene, unless we want to talk about the very ending of the movie, which is really seeing that a scene of a victory, a scene of resurrection. It's when he passes away and the paralyzed man walks, which is what really happened. And that's one big miracle that was featured, but it's in light of resurrection, in light of what that kind of life, the Christ life, what is, it is very painful, but the reward is enormous at the end.
Yeah. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Slandered in this world, but elevated to a wondrous, glorious reward in the life that is to come. You also, Yelena, mentioned the ending of the movie with the healing of the person that Mickey Rourke plays. St. Nectarius dies, and in his death, there is a resurrection, as it were. A man who's paralyzed suddenly receives a gift from God. That is an incredibly powerful scene.
Well, thank you. It was intended to be powerful. I felt like that's one miracle that would emphasize the ending and the meaning of the whole story of the life of Saint Nectarius, is that he's ultimately victorious. He's the one who had peace. He's the one who was free the whole time. He's the one who knew what that peace was and who had that closeness with God, and therefore he was the one who was victorious at the end. So this is really, and you can see that when, as he's dying, when the shirt, they, and this is a true story, this really happened, there is a room still intact in Aretea Hospital in Athens that people can go and visit. His bed is still there. The other two beds are not there. There were another two patients in the room. One was paralyzed, waist down. And yes, indeed, when St. Nectarius passed away and when they were changing him for the burial, when his undershirt was taken off and it was accidentally thrown and it fell on the legs of the paralyzed men. After some time, paralyzed men got up and walked. And people say that, just to add this about St. Nectarius, that he also had, when we talk about a miraculous saint, apparently that the myrrh started to stream right away from his body, that the room had such a smell. They say for 2 months they couldn't, the hospital still smelled of myrrh. And we know this because when he was taken to Piraeus, before he was taken to Aegina on the boat, people came and with the cotton and took the myrrh from his forehead when he was placed in the casket to be taken to Aegina by the boat.
Your Eminence, I wonder if you could sort of make some concluding remarks for the podcast. Obviously, the convent established by St. Nectarius was recognized by the Holy Synod in 1924, and St. Nectarius, the patron saint of Aegina, was declared a saint in 1961. He is among the most recently canonized saints in the Greek Orthodox Church. I've been to Aegina. I've seen the monastery. I've seen the legacy of St. Nectarius, and I personally have experienced the blessing in terms of my own physical healing by being there. If you could just give your perspective on how it all ends with St. Nectarius in the present being a saint of the church, even though he was slandered and persecuted during his lifetime.
I remember when you asked us to be interviewed, I remember one of the terms that you used in our correspondence, you used the word stigma. So let me comment on this, of course, in reference to the saint's trial and life. So also it's important to say that following the manifestation and the recognition of his sainthood, Saint Nectarius' fame spread throughout the world. We all know that. And those who bore witness and have personally benefited from his miracles are located across the four corners of the earth and can bear witness to the tangible presence of the saint of the 20th century, as we say in Greek, Vagios του 20ου αιώνα, in their lives. And so I would say that not only has any stigma pinned to Saint Nectarius during his earthly life, but that the crown he had received without and being living a life of sainthood, and he bore his cross without protest in order to emulate Christ. And of course, we have to remember something very moving, the synodical decision of the Patriarchate of Alexandria during the Patriarchy of the ever-memorable Petrus the Seventh, who issued an apology. They called it Patriarchy Diagnomi, and it was an apology to the saint on behalf of their predecessors, and officially correcting the gross injustice done to him in 1890. And that, I think that was a remarkable recognition of Saint Nectarius as a sanctified man of God. Now, the events leading up to his righteous repose, and especially those that followed, the many manifestations of his miraculous interventions and intercessions, the spread of his fame throughout the world, the recognition and affirmation of his sainthood, and even our discussion right now to reflect upon it and draw inspiration from his life through its worthy depiction via the Seventh Art Cinema, is a testament to this man of God's full participation in the resurrection and crown of salvation offered by Christ himself. You also asked me about his monastery. I think it's important to say that the first thing that I asked Professor Tripoulos to do for me was to undertake the English translation of not my book, but of a book somehow issued back in 1984 of the late Metropolitan of Paramithia, Titos Matriakis, entitled The Catechetical Letters, Catechetikes Epistoles of St. Nectarius of Pentapolis, to the nuns of the Sacred Convent of the Holy Trinity in Aegina. These letters were sent to the nuns leaving the convent of the Holy Trinity, whom the saint himself installed there prior to taking permanent residence in the convent at the end of, actually, the on April of 1908. So Saint Nectarius sent out these letters seeking to educate his nuns in matters of spiritual ascesis. And these letters contain paternal precepts on the exact manner in which to uphold the regulations regarding spiritual asceticism and the monastic life. The Divine Father also sent the nuns copies of the literary works he planned to publish and summarized sermons he delivered at churches in Athens and the port city of Piraeus. And his sermons are characterized by clarity, simplicity, grace, and a sense of sanctity, which is a reflection of his fervent faith in the Holy Trinity. And Saint Nectarius was the leading force behind the establishment of the convent, and the one who directed in other. So all of the construction projects taking place there, he completely rebuilt the convent's church and ensured that it was equipped with the necessary holy articles, furniture, and other items. And the efforts put forth by the saint for the establishment of the convent can only be characterized as superhuman, and they ought to receive the necessary appreciation, considering that the construction and technical means he possessed, we possess today, were not available back then. And Saint Nectarius also showed an interest in the beautification of the area surrounding the convent and the entire island of Aegina, and would organize tree planting drives, sending over a large number of trees of all sorts of the to the mayor of Aegina to beautify the entire island. And a few more words, you know, last words. All of these letters, the catechetical letters, were sent exclusively to the sisters of the newly established convent of the Holy Trinity. They nevertheless serve as a viable guide for every pious Christian. Aside from the references made in the letters to the rules governing the convent, the letters also apply to issues on how to live a virtuous life in Christ, and include numerous references to Saint Nectarius' literary work during the period of 1904 to 1908, accounts of dreams, in addition to Hierarch's relationship with Metropolitan Theotokos of Athens, Elder Pachomius of Chios, his monastic mentor, the Rosario Seminary Board of Trustees, the nuns' families, his relatives, his aide Kostis Akopoulos, as you mentioned before, various individuals from Athens, Egypt, Chalcedon. So Saint Nectarius was constantly educating not only the nuns, but the entire world. Those who are willing to learn so much from him. And the movie of Miss Elena Popovich is teaching us a lot. How we should live a saint's life. And we're so thankful to her. And I'm so thankful to all of you for including me in this beautiful interview, because Elena did a great production. It was so well welcomed by thousands of people throughout the world. Professor Tripoulos has contributed tremendously in translating my articles and my books on Saint Nectarius. And Mr. Hanks, thank you so much for letting us share, you know, what we share in common about Saint Nectarius through this interview. Thank you all.
Your Eminence, thank you so much for those beautiful concluding words. Yelena, I do want to ask you one last question, and that is, other than theaters, is there any other way to see this film? This obviously is a film that has the potential of being world transformational, really.
Well, as soon as a theatrical release is finished, that's usually how the films are, the film's journey. I think sometimes after Easter, I think for 30 days, it's by the contracts with the distributors. We cannot exploit it, but soon after, we are planning on putting our film on online platforms. So it will be available to everybody. And I will communicate that date when we know exactly.
Yelena, thank you so much for producing a masterpiece, Your Eminence Metropolitan Cleopas. I am so grateful for the brilliance of your words, for your writings, for the impact you're making on the lives of so many for time and for eternity. Christopher, I am grateful for you joining us in this podcast as well. For all of you, I want to thank you on behalf of our audience. I know that this podcast can make a difference, as I always say, for time and for eternity. Thank you so much to all of you for tuning in to this edition of Henk Unplugged. Again, we are committed to bringing the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people directly to your earbuds. Thanks for tuning in. Look forward to seeing you next time on another Henk Unplugged. So long for now.